David, we covered this last year. It's okay to deduct income taxes or sales taxes.
Whatever.
You can't deduct the taxes that you pay on liquor.
Why not? It's tax deductible.
It is a basic necessity for him, isn't it?
Yes. I'm a taxpayer.
We're on the air. We're on the air. Good evening. Welcome back, or good morning for those of you who are watching it on Friday, but welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Hoops HD report, Final Four edition, our final Hoops HD report before the end of the season and before we have a national champion. I am your host, Chad Sherwood. To the sides here, we've got David Griggs over there, woo-hoo, Matt Sikowski over there. Down below, we've got Joby Fortson and John Stalica. Our colleague John Titel not with us. He is instead live covering the three-point shootout and slam dunk contest that's coming up this evening. So we're expecting a big report from him coming up later on this weekend.
Right, yeah. John Titel on site at the Final Four.
On site at the Final Four, exactly.
How come he got to go? Why didn't you send me?
You are not allowed in the state of Arizona anymore, David.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. Let's move.
But we do have a lot we want to get to tonight, actually, and we want to start, before we get into the games that happened last week and a preview of the Final Four coming up this week, we actually want to start with some coaching news. Let's start with the biggest one of them all. Lots of coaches, but the biggest one of them all is Archie Miller going from Dayton to Indiana. David, let me throw that over to you here. Are you surprised that Archie Miller took the Indiana job, other than the money thing?
Not really, no. It made sense, I think, on both ends for him. It's a step up, at least as far as the perception goes. For Indiana, I think it was, for lack of a better term, a safe hire. Archie Miller had done well. He kind of had his name out there. It's not who I personally would have chosen had I been Indiana. The reason being, Dayton is, I mean, they're a really strong program, but when you look at their resources and compare that to the teams that they're typically competing against, I know Archie Miller is a fantastic coach, and I think the best year that he had at Dayton was actually the year after they went to the Elite Eight. That was the year where they had all those injuries and suspensions and were basically down to a six-man rotation with no post play whatsoever, and they still made adjustments and did as well as they did. But he's basically used to operating with a lot more than what his competition is used to operating with. And in Indiana, that's not the case. Indiana has a lot of nice stuff, but so does Michigan and Michigan State and Ohio State and Illinois and every other program that he's competing against. And I mean, if you followed me on Under the Radar, the coaches that impress me the most are those that win big with less. And I think I would have probably looked to Wichita had I been Indiana, despite his crazy wife.
First of all, I have to say that I don't think that Greg Marshall was going anywhere. He is one of the top 10 compensated coaches in the nation in terms of salary. Has everybody coming back next year? Could have a Final Four caliber Wichita State team. But, Matt, I thought that Archie Miller was a home run for Indiana. I really did.
Oh, I'm with you 100%, yeah. Chad. I think this is great young coach coming into a situation where I think they need a little bit of a revival. And his personality and that, I think, just enthusiastic enough, just authentic enough, that I think he's going to be a huge hit in Indiana. And I think within 5 years, they're going to be in a Final Four there.
And Joby, with Archie Miller going over to Indiana, that opened up the Dayton job for Anthony Grant, a guy with some former VCU ties even down there.
And Alabama. I always thought Anthony Grant. I don't understand why it didn't work at Alabama, to be honest, because he did do a good job, you know, at VCU. And VCU, it's like the coaches leave VCU and fall off a cliff, even though they get these great jobs like Texas for Shaka and Capel. What happens when they leave VCU? I don't know. But I think Grant's a good coach. He teaches good defense. And I truly believe it's that, you know, he's almost coming home. I don't know if the recruiting, he's usually a pretty darn good recruiter. I don't know if he's hooked into that part of the country, but given the nationalization of the AAU circuit, that might not be as big a deal as it might have been even 20 years, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, he did play for Dayton, didn't he? So he has to know something about that.
He played in the mid-80s from 1983 through 1987. So okay. He was actually a part of the Elite Eight team in Dayton for 1984.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I think it, yeah, I think it was a good hire for Dayton. Joby mentioned Alabama. He didn't do as well as expected, but he did go to one tournament. I think it's the only one Alabama's been to in the last 58 years or something like that. And they were a sub-NIT team when he got there, and he made them a NIT team, which isn't as good as they wanted to be or should have been, but he did elevate the program a little bit. And again, at Dayton, I just think it's easy to win at Dayton. I think it's great for both of them.
We actually saw a couple other coaches that have been out of the head coaching ranks recently that kind of came back. South Florida hiring Brian Gregory and Dennis Felton going to Cleveland State. Here's a guy we'd forgot about for a few years too. Back in the head coaching ranks. So I don't think that Dennis Felton we can quite laugh at as much as we can Brian Gregory.
Well, yeah, no, you can't laugh at Dennis Felton. Dennis Felton was actually very, very successful at Western Kentucky, and they were really bad when he took over. They were really good when he left. He goes to Georgia, had a couple good teams, made a tournament, was actually the coach in that year where they had that ridiculous run in the through the SEC where they won, I think, three games in about 30 hours. It was just this –
stadium issue.
Yeah, because yeah, of the a tornado hit the roof.
Right.
Yeah. And
there's a great there's a great ESPN show about that also. Great.
Right. There. And he had some other teams that should have been better than what they were, but plagued by injuries. I think this is a great hire for Cleveland State. I think Dennis Felton was better than probably what he got credit for. He was certainly great at Western Kentucky. I think he'll do well at Cleveland State, and I'm glad he is no longer Frank Hayes' assistant, because no one deserves to be Frank Hayes' assistant.
Well, speaking about assistants, Slika, actually, we saw Oklahoma State staying in-house, bringing Mike Boynton up from the assistant job to take that spot to replace Brad Underwood, and Cal going with an assistant also, Wyking Jones, to replace Quanzo Martin. Were you surprised that these two teams both stayed in-house?
Not necessarily. I mean, I'm sure Oklahoma State was probably a little more surprised to begin with, given that Underwood decided to take the Illinois job after only about a year on the job. But I guess it had to do with more of what Underwood was being compensated compared to what Illinois was willing to offer him. And even though, as we pointed out last week, the Big Ten did have a nice run in the NCAA tournament, but as far as the regular season goes, the best they could manage was a 4 seed this year. So it might be a little more manageable during the regular season than it would have been in a rock fight in the Big 12.
Matt, the kind of the only major job that's still sitting here vacant at the moment is a Georgetown job. And you have a lot of Big East ties yourself. Any thoughts on where this is going? We'd heard Patrick Ewing's name mentioned a little bit.
There's been a little bit of rumblings of Danny Hurley, and I think that would be a pretty solid fit. One of those that's kind of like double type hires, not wow, awe inspiring, but would be decent. But other than that, God knows. Like, it's been fairly quiet, other than Shaka and Mike Bray basically saying thanks, but no thanks. Other than that, not a whole lot's gotten out in the public. And
well, Joby, how about you? You're down there.
I cannot wait to hear.
You know what? I come to bury JT3, not to praise him. I actually don't dislike John Thompson III, despite all this. Georgetown's got one big problem, and it's not John Thompson III. It's John Thompson. Yeah. He has too much control over the program. That's why Patrick Ewing's name's being thrown out. I mean, Ewing's at least a prominent assistant coach. I mean, there have been worse hires, but I don't see how that hire will work. You just can't come home again if that's the way it goes. This should be a plum job. I don't know if it is. I really don't. I feel like the fact you have John Thompson overseeing things in such a he's larger than life there, rightfully so. He won a national title and, you know, established the program for why it is an elite program. But with him there, with him having such an imprint on the program, I don't see how they move forward. I feel like they're stuck in the past, and I don't,
what is it John Thompson does there?
Half the Big East for a while.
Yeah, I understand.
I'll put it to you another way, David. It's not like Bob Knight is going to be casting such a shadow over the Indiana program that he's going to be affecting day-to-day like Thompson Jr. is at Georgetown.
Yeah, well, John Thompson reportedly has an office there.
Yeah.
Why? What exactly does he do when he shows up for work? Like, what is his daily function there?
He's kind of a promotion. Well, and the thing is, he is out in the community promoting Georgetown a lot. I mean,
yeah.
He, and that's okay. Maybe part of the problem. He is so well, he is still practically, he was almost more of the face of the program than his son.
Well, Joby, I'll tell you that my impression that I'm getting, especially how long it's taken for Georgetown to do anything, is that there is some type of real big battle going on right now, JT3 versus the let's move on in a new direction type of thing here. And maybe that's why Patrick Ewing hasn't been hired yet and why it's still kind of out there. And maybe we're going to find out in the next few weeks here who wins this power struggle.
Patrick Ewing has been on that staff. Has he ever been a head coach?
No.
No.
Is Patrick Ewing a logical choice for a
pro that moved on to that?
Yeah.
I mean, but not as high as Georgetown, but to head coaching college, Division One college ranks. That's not an unusual
thing. But here's a problem, though, when you look at what Chad had alluded to, because Georgetown had waited and they were dawdling as to whether or not to fire him. They missed the boat on guys like Kevin Keats.
Yeah.
Well, there's other names out there, but Matt, you had another comment on it?
I would say, like, this discussion, I think this might not be the time when Georgetown is, like, a plum opening of that. I think next time around could really be when maybe they get the Shaka Smart, Mike Bray type of hire.
I don't think they can ever get a Shaka, Shaka Mike Bray. No way Mike Bray leaves Notre Dame ever, ever for Georgetown. And, yes, I know that Bray coached at DeMatha. I know he has ties to the area. But
well,
no,
I think that's Bray's funny. That's
not leaving.
No, Larry, no, I'll say maybe like not him, but like I think that maybe that saying. Level, yeah. Bray, well, Bray specifically because of DeMatha, actually, that's why that's actually a non-starter that someone should have realized, wait a minute, DeMatha and the Thompsons hate each other. What the hell are we doing going down that road?
I think
what you're talking about, Matt, is maybe the equivalent of an Archie Miller hire.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that no, type no, no. of like a very hot hire where this time around, because of the political infighting,
hire.
Next time around, I can see like.
Well, next time around, it's a hot hire. You need someone with integrity and a brand name. You need Larry Brown. He's available.
Actually, I heard his name mentioned for the LIU Brooklyn job, believe it or not. So let's hold off on that. He may be working next year. And this is serious. David, I want to throw one other – it's an under-the-radar coaching move that happened this week that really shocked me in its timing. And that's Nico Medved, the head coach at Furman, who had a great season with him this year, had them in the CIT semifinals. Before the semifinal game, he takes the Drake job, leaving the team with an interim coach – for the semifinal in the championship tournament. Did that shock you as much as it shocked me? Just the timing.
Yes.
Why not wait?
Well, the timing of it, the timing and the move itself. And I realize the Valley is probably collectively, well, not probably, it is. It's collectively better than the SoCon, but Drake is not better than Furman.
Well, but
especially as well as he had done it, Furman.
The fact that you have your team is still playing and in the semifinals of a tournament,
right?
And you leave the school and leave him with an assistant with your assistant coach to take over as an interim coach for the semifinals.
Yeah, no, that was bizarre. And he was a coach that I kind of liked, maybe not for Georgetown, but for openings that were a little more prominent than that. He had a good thing going where he was, and his team was still playing. Yeah, it was surprising.
So, Joe, you had a comment on it also?
Yeah, Drake. I'm with David. This whole thing. Drake is not. I mean, the Valley's better, but I don't see Drake having the resources to move up to be that next thing. They're not Indiana State. They're not. Yeah. There are Valley teams who I think can jump up. Yeah, Bradley maybe. But I don't see Drake being that team. I see Drake being a perennial loser in that conference.
Yeah, Drake's the worst job in that league. As someone who's kind of a Valley fan just because of the Illinois State ties.
Well, let's go ahead and let's turn to the actual basketball that's being played now and turn to – gosh, I'm going to go ahead and pull the bracket up here on the screen. Should be coming up right now. There it is. We see the top half, at least, of this year's bracket, and let's go ahead and talk about what happened in each region last weekend, as well as preview our Final Four. And Salika, I've got to start with you in the East region. Your South Carolina Gamecocks unbelievably not only blew away Baylor, then took out Florida after that amazing Florida-Wisconsin overtime game. But your thoughts on what we saw in the East region last weekend?
Again, I continue to be stunned, and this was a nice little fact they brought up, I think, on ESPN. South Carolina is the first team since Cincinnati in 1992 to go more than 10 years since making the tournament and go to the Final Four in the same season. And this was not like 1992 where the Bearcats, I think, beat a 5 seed and then had the benefit of playing a 7 and a 6 because the other half collapsed in front of them. They actually beat a 2, a 3, and a 4 just to make it to the Final Four in Phoenix.
Yeah, not to mention starting, Matt, with your Marquette team way, way back in that first round.
Yeah, well, I don't feel so bad at this point.
Yeah.
But David, Frank Martin, I've got to say that, I mean, his team here just has ignited an entire state, first of all, that probably hasn't cared about basketball in who knows how many years.
It's a huge, huge deal. And they were well represented, well, all season long, really. And I guess going back to last year, too, every game was seemingly sold out or close to it, especially at least after conference play started. Throughout the tournament, no matter where that team was, there were South Carolina fans there well representing. There's a huge buzz going on there. It's probably going to be one of those deals where as soon as the schedule comes out in September next year, they're going to be all sold out within a couple of days. So he has created a basketball culture at a place that didn't really have much of one to him.
Not on the men's side, at least.
The women's side is pretty outstanding.
Yeah, whatever South Carolina fans don't make it to Phoenix are going to be flocking to Dallas to catch the Lady Gamecocks, it would appear.
Right.
Joby, I was going to throw this out there also. How about just the state of South Carolina could hold both the football and the basketball championship?
Yeah, Clemson and, yeah, I mean, UConn's, yeah, it's the UConn Invitational on the women's side, but, right. You know, South Carolina could do the double. And you're talking to someone who cannot believe how jealous they are because it should be Virginia on the women's side. Oh, you hire Boyle instead of Dawn Staley?
Okay.
Get me started on that.
But a great they did to Baylor was just – it was – like, had you told me that they were going to win that game by 20, I would have said that's insanity.
And that's the thing is, South Carolina has – you know, they have – as I remember, Matt, Marquette was favored in that game. They've been the underdog in every game.
I think South Carolina was favored, but I think partly because of the home court. Had it been a true neutral site, Marquette would have probably been a 1 or 2 favorites.
But they win by 20, and then what they did to Baylor went in by 20. I mean, this is – and these aren't close. Like, I felt, you know, the Florida-South Carolina game was somewhat tight at the end. But you always felt South Carolina was in control, which shocks me. I mean, I did not see this run at all. Yes, great defense. Yes, Frank Martin's put together some great strategy. But, my gosh, I didn't see this at all. And anyone who says they did, including those in Columbia –
David, let me scroll down here and turn to the South Carolina's opponent in the semifinals, Gonzaga, and they got by West Virginia and was a really fun game.
Yeah,
and then ended up taking on the Xavier Musketeers in that West Regional final, which was not quite a close game.
Right. I coming into that game, you had the feeling that Gonzaga had advanced to the Elite Eight without really playing well, or at least not as well as we saw them play through most of the season, yet they're still in the Elite Eight. Against Xavier, it just seemed like even in the first half, Xavier was kind of keeping pace, but Gonzaga was still opening it up. And it just seemed like Gonzaga was hitting everything that wasn't contested and even a lot that was contested. And then in the second half, they just completely blew it open.
And the thing that I felt in that game was both Gonzaga's big guys, both Karnowski and Collins and the freshman coming off the bench there, were both in foul trouble the whole game, yet Mark Few was able to sub them in and out between each other and always have one of the two on the floor. And I thought that was a difference.
Yeah.
Just the way that they were able to dominate despite the foul troubles there. Mm-hmm. Sleek, I got to go back to you on your team, which did have a great season, great run in this tournament, at least, including the win over Arizona in the West Region semifinal there.
I mean, they went with the same girl to the dance throughout all four rounds, and it worked against Florida State and Arizona. Were they able to pack it in the lane and basically dare both teams to try to beat them from outside? And sure enough, it's in the final 10 seconds, it was, the name is escaping from me, from Arizona, Alonzo Trier, who tried to hit a game-winning three, but it rimmed in and out. But when they tried to pack it in against Gonzaga, they just could not miss. And when they finally did go back to Karnowski, it was just too late. But definitely a very good performance for Xavier overall. And as we'll allude to a little bit later, Edmund Sumner has already declared for the NBA draft and is hired an agent. And would not be surprised if Trayvon Blewett does the same in the upcoming weeks to come.
Matt, you were on this Gonzaga bandwagon from day one of the season. There they are, finally making the first Final Four, despite all the success they've had. That's kind of been the one hump they haven't been able to get over. Mark Few just won the AP Coach of the Year today on top of that. You're picking them to win two more games, I think, right?
Yes, you would be correct.
I am as well. I think they're the best team left.
Well, let's kind of look at the other half of the bracket here. Joby, you're our ACC guy, and we do have one ACC team left in this tournament, and that's North Carolina. With, you know, two teams in Gonzaga and South Carolina who have never been to the Final Four before. Yeah. Oregon, who we'll get to in a minute, who hasn't been since the first Final Four they ever played back in 39. And then we had the battle of the two blue bloods, Kentucky and Carolina in the South region. Carolina survives.
And that game, you know, I've said to some folks behind the scenes before, and I'll repeat myself, it was a game of two halves. The first half was actually extremely poorly played.
It was awful.
Yeah. I mean, neither team could hit shots, and it wasn't because of defense. Just poor play. But then the second half, you said, wow, now this is why those kids were highly recruited. This is why Coach Cal and Coach Williams are two of the best. Wow, this is great basketball. And then Kentucky decided not to play the final 4 minutes. But give Carolina credit on that, on some really lockdown D. But, yeah, Kentucky showed their youth at the very end, and Carolina pulled it out. And, and then just an amazing, you know, obviously the amazing finish with May. It very, you know, harkens back, you know, I don't know if people saw the Christian Laettner tweet, but, you know, he tweeted to May saying the force is with him, just probably driving all those Wildcat fans nuts.
Yeah, but how about –
given the after effects of how their fans have treated one of the officials.
Well
– but Luke May, David, really just came out of nowhere to suddenly be the huge star in this game.
Yeah.
It was a fun game to watch. It was sloppy at times on both ends. It was back and forth, but – I mean, for this to be the final Elite Eight game between Kentucky and North Carolina, two of the bigger names. I mean, did you see the numbers they had? I think, and 21 million viewers, which is huge for the Elite Eight, especially these days. And that doesn't count other means in which people were watching. So kind of a good finale just for the tournament and all that too. But May coming out of nowhere. Yeah.
That's also a byproduct of having that game on CBS as opposed to the Saturday games that were on TBS and on cable.
Right. Matt, you had a comment on the game also?
Well, I'd say this is more in general. I think Roy Williams does not get the credit he deserves for being a really good coach, like all-time great, and I think probably the best coach going today, given his overall resume. And like, I think was his fifth Final Four now in Carolina.
And by the way, he was a miracle shot from winning the championship last year in the finals.
Yeah, and I think has a decent chance to win it this year.
he doesn't get the credit from Lee Del Vecchio, but I think he gets it from most other people. But you mentioned what happened with John Higgins after the game, and Right. You really just hate to see that. Like, a lot of these refs, they don't work for the NCAA. They're hired on a game-by-game basis. And for him to be being harassed like that and attacked like that, you just hate to see it. Now,
I think we've got to give the award to Kentucky fans for the most classless fans year for what has happened here. Not only bombarding his other business, his construction business, forcing that business to take down its website and its Facebook page, then death threats that he's actually had to contact the police. It's just that's beyond, way beyond.
Right. And Rob Riley was a different story. And I mean, I know this is pending, but for those of you that don't know, Rob Riley was one of the officials in the Nebraska Penn State Big Ten tournament game that Penn State won in overtime. And he basically, in my opinion, took the game away from Nebraska and ended what would have been a Final Four run. We'd still be talking about them now. So, I mean, if you want to harass.
And the puppet's been muted. Okay, so let's move on here now. And,
I think we should be thanking that referee, not harassing him.
But actually, Joby, one other thing that came out of the news, actually, I was just watching tonight, Joel Berry is still hurting for Carolina. Yeah. He did not practice today, and Roy Williams said that if he doesn't get full court practice tomorrow, he's probably not going to play on Saturday.
He's been valiant throughout. I see him practicing some. He's been a walking boot between games every game since I think even before the ACC tournament that might have started post-ACC tournament. He's been like this the whole time. I just don't see how he doesn't play. If he doesn't play, Britt cannot run the point like Barry can. They are in trouble. At least, you know, maybe they can use their size to get past Oregon, but if they were to play Gonzaga, that's a tough place to team to play without a elite point guard, which Barry is. And let's say Barry is healthy enough to go, and let's say Carolina does beat Oregon, which is no given. Barry has a 2-day turnaround, and that could be pretty tough when going up against what could be a very tough, you know, either defensive South Carolina team or loaded Gonzaga team.
Well, David, let me unmute you, bring you back in here, talk to the one.
Why was I muted?
The Oregon Ducks when it comes to proved this past weekend that they don't need Chris Boucher to win.
They did. It was one of the out of the four Elite Eight games, I think this is the one that shocked me the most, even more so than South Carolina is collectively the biggest surprise. But as far as any of the Sweet 16 games, which we didn't talk that much about, this one was just astounding. To go into Kansas City without such a key player against a Kansas team that has shown almost no weaknesses at any point and to beat them handily like that, I was amazed.
Yeah, Matt, Kansas had just come off of a 32-point thrashing of Purdue and just – didn't show up against – did they not show up, or did Oregon just that good?
I think was it Jordan Bell just so controlled things on the inside that, like, they couldn't get to the basket, and then Devontae Graham's threes weren't falling, and just – I think Kansas was thrown out of whack, and they never really got into a rhythm all game. And then Tyler Dorsey for Oregon just hit some amazing shots that – there you go. That's how – what was probably – still probably a fairly big upset. Did it look like an upset in real time?
All right. That leaves us with our Final Four. Like we mentioned, three teams that either have never been, or at least in Oregon's case, was been back in 1939 when they only had to win one game to make the Final Four.
Yeah, it's just amazing. You have Gonzaga, who's never been, South Carolina, who's never been, Oregon, who has never been since the first one, and North Carolina, who's never been. Just an amazing Final Four.
North Carolina, who hasn't been in at least 365 days, right? Yeah.
But actually, 362, Chad.
362, yeah. You're correct. Yes, Joby. But Joby, let me stick with you here for a second, actually. What do you see coming up in these two semifinals and the championship game on Monday now that we've got the Final Four set?
Well, you mentioned the Barry injury, and that's going to have a big impact. And Matt, excellent point on Jordan Bell, because I think your analysis of that Kansas-Oregon game was spot on. I don't think he can do that against Carolina. You know, this is very different. I think Hicks and Meeks and Bradley, they can throw you at waves. And Oregon's going to need some special performances from their guys, Dorsey. Yeah, they're going to need some special stuff to come and beat Carolina, I think, if Barry is playing, which I think will happen. And I think the other thing is Oregon has seen teams like UCLA be able to go up and down, but the discipline Carolina has running the break combined with when they want to play defense, which I think they will, I think Carolina is going to be able to do the job against Oregon. But, we'll see. The Barry injury is definitely looming.
Well, Matt, let me throw this back over to you. You mentioned you still have Gonzaga winning it. How does Gonzaga, even with Karnowski, match up with Carolina's size if they play each other in the championship game?
Oh, Gonzaga's size, not just Karnowski. You got Jonathan Williams, and then off the bench you got the two freshmen, Killian Tilly and Zach Collins.
Killian Tilly isn't going to do much. Zach Collins, I agree with you, but not
Collins.
You can't.
I think Killian Tilly can do every bit what Luke May does.
Have an incredible game once a season?
Killian Tilly is going to probably play pro ball somewhere down the road. NBA scouts really like him, Max. So, well, he's not going to probably be a star in the Final Four. He might hit a couple of threes, and he's more athletic than you would think, too. So,
you do think Gonzaga wins? Do you think they beat Carolina, or do you think they beat Oregon?
No, I think they beat Carolina. I think both semifinal games might be double digits. I think Gonzaga Carolina will be really close.
So, a repeat of last year with both semifinal games being not exciting at all, and then Carolina losing in a really close game.
Yeah, basically, yeah. That's
all right, yeah.
David, do you agree with him?
I actually do. Okay. I have not been as big on North Carolina really at any point of the season as pretty much everyone else at Hoops HD, but I like how they've played during the tournament. A game that we didn't really mention, but I thought the game against Butler, although Butler could not hit some open looks, it wouldn't have mattered. North Carolina just blew them to kingdom come. I mean, it was just an ass beating, and that was a really good Butler team. I thought it was North Carolina's one of their more impressive performances of the entire year, especially when it looked like they had to sweat out Arkansas a little bit. So I like how they're playing, and as impressed as I was with Oregon the other night, I just think Carolina gets it done. But I think ultimately Gonzaga wins.
So you got Gonzaga over Carolina also.
Yeah.
Stalika, let me get your thoughts on the same question.
I hope Carolina doesn't have a 7-point lead just completely evaporate into a 1-point lead again, because either three of these teams is fully capable of knocking them out if something like that occurs again. But I think it's going to end up being Gonzaga and Carolina in the title game, but it will be sweet revenge for the Tar Heels this time around, I think.
Joby, I never got the other half of your pick. I know you said Carolina's going to come out there.
I think Gonzaga takes care of South Carolina. I think the difference maker, I'm going to go with Salika on this. The difference maker, assuming Barry, once again, the Barry question is a big deal. I'm glad you brought it up, Chad. But the player we have not mentioned for North Carolina, who is the most important and someone who other teams cannot match up with, is Jackson. I mean, inside, outside, this is the real star of this team. I think it seems like he's showing his best ball now, and I really like the game that he has. I think he will be the difference that he did not fully show last year against Villanova. I think he will be the difference this year that does give Carolina that win in the championship game. But if I saw Mark Few cutting down nets, it's not going to shock me at all. Angry Frank cutting down nets, that would show.
Well, I'm going to say
Frank doesn't cut down the nets. He yanks down the nets.
I got to tell you that I do agree with all of you that North Carolina will beat Oregon, which, of course, that probably means the opposite is going to happen. But I'm actually going to take South Carolina to knock off the Zags. I've got this feeling about the South Carolina team this year, and it's not something that I can point to stats or players or anything. They just seem to have that it this year that I've been seeing in these games,
wow,
especially what they did to Duke. And that's why I'm picking South Carolina to win this whole damn thing.
Wow.
That's my pick. You heard it.
Give you credit, Chad, if you're right.
Right. And that's what I was predicting back in November.
Yeah, South Carolina,
And it's a good point on the Duke, because when you're comparing to a Carolina team, but South Carolina, Duke and Carolina are very different. Duke has actually more talent, maybe, total pure talent, than North Carolina, you could strongly argue. However, they don't have the maturity. And, yes, I'm including Grayson Allen that. Grayson Allen's not mature. They don't have the maturity of this Carolina team. And I think that's the difference, because all those inside games, Jackson being a key element, Barry being a key element. I'm not a huge fan of Britt, but he is seasoned. Pinson. They've got just the depth to be able to go at you, and it's experience depth. And that's why they've learned their lesson maybe from last year to go over the top. And I don't see a South Carolina team doing what they did to Duke to Carolina, which was expose youth.
And again, it's not something that I can pinpoint. It's just one of those gut feelings here, and I'll admit it. David, we've had a few other tournaments going on. Yep. And as we record this, the NIT championship game has about 7 minutes left in it, and TCU is rolling over Georgia Tech. Let me pull the NIT bracket up here. It's actually been a crazy NIT tournament, though, when you had an 8-6 and 2-4 seeds making the final four in this event.
It's been
Bakersfield, and I think we got to give them a shout out here.
Right, yeah. One of the more fun – I mean, that was a fun team to watch run through it. And I know the bottom of the WAC is pretty bad, but with Cal State Bakersfield coming on like they have, and not just this year, but last year making the NCAA tournament and making some of the noise they had during the regular season, you have Grand Canyon, the former team of the people, and maybe soon to be again the team of the people, who knows. Yeah. Well, we'll get into that later. You have them. You have New Mexico State. And you also have Cal Baptist, who kind of fell apart at the end of this year but was still ranked in the top 20 and did fairly well Division II. I think they lost in the round of 32. So
they're 2 years away from being in the WAC, though. So
right. But, I mean, I'm just forecasting the WAC has some pretty decent basketball in it. And how can you not be impressed with what Bakersfield did in this NIT?
I think the biggest thing with the WAC, if you want to forecast, is can they keep some of these teams in there, actually, teams like New Mexico State who might leave for football reasons. But, but Matt,
UT Arlington, nice tournament run, too.
Matt, when you look at the NIT here, not a single one of these 4-1 seeds won more than one game in this event. And the 2 seeds, I think Illinois was the only one to win 2 games. Does that just show you that teams just don't want to be here playing in the NIT?
Yeah, at least this year's group. Illinois State, I mean, they played hard against Central Florida, just they couldn't score inside against Tackle Fall. And then Illinois with the interim coach, who I think wanted to prove something, but these other dudes, I think Syracuse did not want to be there. Cal, well, good Lord, they didn't want to be there. Kwanzaa Martin really did not want to be there.
But even Clemson didn't want to be there. Iowa didn't want to be there.
Yeah,
Georgia didn't want to be there. None of them wanted to be there.
Josh Pastner wanted to be there.
Well, hey, there you go. Jamie Dixon at TCU. That's
I think that's part of it.
Final quarter, puppet.
Yeah. Well, I think that's part of it. I think another part of it is that maybe some of these teams are a little bit better. Although there were even me, who loves these under the radar teams, like some of these were big surprises in this tournament.
What I will say is that last year, none of the teams that were in the Final Four of the NIT did anything for this season. But I think we got 4 teams. All 4 of these teams are possible, or should be, look like NCAA tournament teams for next year, possibly. If
they all
Taco
could
Fall
be,
is back for UCF. TCU, Jamie Dixon has them absolutely going in the right direction. Same with Pastner at Georgia Tech. And
Bakersfield in the WAC. He's a stud at Georgia Tech. Freshman. He's awesome. With Lammers. They've got a good 1-2 punch at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, they might. Although I don't know how much this might help, just because it's going back to the Memphis route. But they have a couple of really good recruits, seriously, considering Georgia Tech. Jordan Tucker and MJ Walker.
But in some respects, TCU's run to what looks like an NIT championship is also surprising, because let's not forget, they lost their last 7 straight games to end the regular season. And then something happened in the Big 12 tournament. They beat Kansas. Lost the close one in the semifinals and will now be in the process of winning 5 straight to win the NIT.
Yeah. Right. Huge turnaround for that program.
David, I know you're under the radar guy. The CIT, here's the matchup here. We saw last night Texas A&M Corpus Christi and St. Peter's win. St. Peter's at Corpus Christi coming up Friday night, 9 o'clock on CBS Sports Network. How excited are you for the CIT championship game?
Oh, I'm not going to sleep tonight. I will be watching. This has always been a fun tournament for me. Even other aspects like Fort Wayne, who was disappointing all year, winning a couple games in it. But really, this year, as far as in the past, we've seen some intriguing and exciting games. It seems like every game in this tournament, from basically the quarterfinals on, has just been utter, like, eye-gougingly not close, not exciting. What was the score last night in that St. Peter's Furman game? I think it was like 20-1 or something like that at one point.
I am actually looking forward to tomorrow night's game. There's a good style matchup here. St. Peter's does run a slow down offense. Corpus Christi tries to run up and down, score a ton of points. They got Rayshon Thomas, who's an amazing player there. So
yeah,
I think it could be, has a chance to be a fun game. But if it goes like the last two rounds, it'll probably be just an ugly blowout again.
Yeah. Furman Campbell, I was actually kind of looking forward to that one because, you know, the proximity of the schools, they don't regularly play and how hot Campbell had been. But, again, not even that was not that much fun. Not a lot of good games. I'm trying really hard to pump up this tournament, and it's hard.
Joby, I know you were glued to every CBI game, so I got to throw this tournament over to you. But here it is. Here is a CBI, actually. It uses a best-of-three format for the finals. Coastal Carolina and Wyoming are tied 1-1. Come up tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, the third and deciding game. And actually, I think we got to throw a little level here to Cliff Ellis. After back-to-back NCAA tournaments last year, didn't make the NCAA, but ran to the semifinals of the CIT. Now he's a shot at a CBI championship. He has actually done an amazing job down there.
Yeah, nobody gets higher than Wyoming, though.
And if you saw the second half of that game.
And give the WAC, give Utah Valley a little shout-out, you know, and UIC. I mean, we got some WAC love, you know, there.
Chad.
How does George Washington end this tournament?
Because they wrote a check and they got to play.
Their coach is one of the clients of the Gazelle Group. Chad Joby, and if Tytel were here, I'd ask him with your legal background, what is the worst thing I could say about the Gazelle Group on this podcast and not have them sue me?
I better mute the puppet right now. let me go ahead and pull that down then. That is a CBI. If you want to watch basketball tomorrow night, we have that. I do want to give a quick shout out. We had a few other champions crowned over the past couple of weeks, including our D2 champion, Northwest Missouri State, our D3 champion, Babson of Massachusetts, and our NAIA champions at the D1 level, Texas Wesleyan, the D2 level, Union Kentucky. So that is going way under the radar. Ooh, there.
Yeah, Union Kentucky.
Union Kentucky, oh. NAIA, D2 champions. Matt, I'm sure you watch those games intensely, right?
Yeah, I have a detailed breakdown. Just give me about 15 minutes to prepare it.
Okay. I know Union, at least I think I do. Aren't they – and this is real. NCAA hockey, I think that they're one of the top 10 programs in the nation.
They're probably thinking of Union in New York, not Kentucky.
Oh, not Union, Kentucky.
Well, never mind then.
Yeah, but we do have, as we did allude to earlier, also, of course, the women's Final Four is coming up as well. UConn taking on Mississippi State and South Carolina against Stanford tomorrow night. Joe, basically, let me throw this over to you here. Is this just UConn's going to win this and run their winning streak up to 10 million games in a row or whatever?
Yeah, unfortunately, the biggest upset that we could see in this weekend of any sort is not South Carolina over Gonzaga. It's not even South Carolina running the table. It's any team coming within 10 points of the UConn win. I mean, they're just – I heard this. It's just not fun. I paid attention to women's basketball when you had those great Tennessee-UConn showdowns. You don't have that anymore, and it's gotten – it's amazing, UConn. Yeah, way to go, Lee Delvecchio. You got a tremendous program there. But the sport just isn't You know, it's just it's not what I think it could be. I think it can be a easily the strongest women's sport, and it could be a top three, top four sport in the NCAA.
I will say this for Mississippi State, though. They didn't have them play UConn yet, but they did take out one of the ones in Baylor just to get to their first ever Final Four.
Right, but yeah,
From my brief knowledge, aren't the two biggest such to UConn, basically Baylor and Notre Dame, are running out?
Yep, but they are. But I was going to ask this. I think, Joe, I just got your answer. But, Dave, let me ask you this. Is this just bad for the women's game, actually, how dominant UConn is?
I don't want to say that it is, but it might actually be. And my thing is, well, what do you want them to do? UConn should not do anything any differently. They are the most recognizable program. Without them, would women's basketball get the attention it gets from the casual fan and the casual media? But at the same time, I mean, I'm not old enough to remember UCLA winning 10 and 11 years or whatever it was in 88 in a row. But it seems to me that that kind of catapulted men's basketball because it was a storyline of whether or not someone could knock them off, at least based on what I've heard. But UConn is so dominant. It actually isn't good. Not that they're as good as they are, but that no one else is even in a position to challenge them. Here it is, the Final Four, and the final scores will look worse than most bye games.
So, in other words, about 20 years from now, we're going to see, the UConn coaching job change quickly like a UCLA did after John Wynn left. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
On that note, actually, let me run through each of you here. I think run through any other final thoughts for the evening. Matt, let me start with you.
We got right now with Gonzaga a chance to have back-to-back national champions from Catholic schools. As, of course, an alum of one here, like my colleagues John and maybe or maybe not the puppet, and that it would be awesome to see, and rooting for schools that have that new selling thing. Oh, wait a minute. Marquette can win a national title. Xavier can win a national title after you see if you see Villanova and Gonzaga do it in back-to-back years. It wouldn't be like a 1 in 100 chance anymore. It would be long shot, but realistic if you get everything in place.
True. I mean, I think that's what we're really learning here is that you don't have to be a football powerhouse to win a championship in basketball. Sleeka.
I think we also have to go back to the South Carolina and Baylor game. I mean, if you saw the post or heard the post game presser, it was a kid from SI, I think it's Sports Illustrated for Kids, that had the first question for Frank Martin. And his question was, I mean, what's more important as far as defense? Is it schematics or attitude? And Martin was quick to point out that it was one of the best questions he had heard since he had become a head coach, and explain why the attitude was extremely important for his team and showed in part why they've been able to make this run to the East region and make it to their first Final Four.
I would just want to point out that our John Titel was not at that press conference. Otherwise, it would have been the second best question.
Right. Yeah.
Joey.
I'm going to reemphasize a point that's been said a lot in the mainstream media. It is worth noting, because I'm as much a victim of this as possible, as anyone else. When you look at what conferences the Final Four teams came from, three of them come from conferences that were dismissed for the most part or roundly criticized, I being one of those who criticized in many cases, probably overly. I mean, I had a field day ragging on the SEC. When you look at my bracket, every SEC team went less than where their seed was supposed to take them. I was wrong. The SEC was much better. And one tournament doesn't change that, but a bunch of teams showing they're better than they were did. Likewise, the Pac-12 did show itself pretty well, specifically Oregon, despite injuries, getting where they want. And the West Coast Conference, I always said the West Coast Conference is one of the most underrated conferences this year, but it didn't get the credit that others did. And the ACC, while North Carolina's in the Final Four, pretty much fell off flat on its face for the most part otherwise. It goes to show, yes, one tournament does not determine conference strength. You do have to look at the whole season. The ACC still is one of the best conferences, even though they didn't perform in this tournament. But this tournament is a significant fact point to look to. Maybe we need to not take our assumptions that we always have, that myself include on that, and completely make judgments before we do see the true test, the big, not the true test, but the biggest test between conferences, and that is the NCAA tournament.
Let me throw it back to Matt for a second, David, before I go to you.
I was just saying, real quick to follow that, Joby, I think this tournament's going to be a launching pad for the SEC. You've got, I think, Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky. Obviously, I don't think any of them are going anywhere. And then Avery Johnson, Alabama, has a top five recruiting class coming in. I think next year you finally see Auburn make the jump we've been waiting for the last couple of years under Bruce Pearl. And suddenly you might be looking at a 7-8-bit SEC where 4 or 5 of them are threats to get to the second weekend. And
Tennessee. Don't forget about them.
Don't forget Tennessee. Don't forget Mississippi State. Yeah.
So. Mississippi State. Ole Miss has got that game with Wichita State. Let's see how they play.
Yep. David, though, your final thoughts.
Yeah, just a quick shout-out. How about that Sweet 16? It was some of the better games, probably most of the good ones that came out of that round. You had Florida and Whiskey giving us both the only overtime and the only buzzer beater. You had, like, Gonzaga, West Virginia, while a foul fest, really intense, really exciting. Xavier over Arizona on a game that came down to the last shot. Kentucky-UCLA was one of the more boring ones, and it was still a really good game. Oregon over Michigan. I mean, we talked about what they did to Kansas, but holy crap, that game was great. So a lot of really good – I mean, what was that? 5 of the 8 Sweet 16 games were classics or near classics. Fun round.
Well, I guess on that note, I want to end with one final thought, and that is there was one other tournament that was supposed to have been played this past couple of weeks and did not get played, unfortunately. It was our own ACA tournament. It's right up there on the screen. Unfortunately, we started with the MEAC bonus game with Javal Crowley's Ridge against Tim Miles. Unfortunately, as soon as Coach Miles stepped on that, our floor there, the whole damn thing sank into the river.
Chad, I got to say here, I think you did a really poor job planning the logistics of this.
Well, the plan was an aircraft carrier.
You wanted to play this on a lake, Chad.
We are going to work on getting a better boat for next season. So our apologies to all the participants in the ACA tournament, and our especially our apologies for Tim Miles, who, you know, David at least had to jump in there and try to give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and now he's going to need psychological counseling for quite some while.
He's not too happy with us, Chad.
And Ed Morrill saw that and went running for the hills.
But on that note, though, on behalf of Joby Forson and John Slica down there, Matt Zukowski and David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining
us. AC8, Chad. It's not even in Atlantic City. It's in a friggin' boat.
What can I say? Have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon.